Welcome. Hola. Bienvenidos. Bonjour et bienvenue to the Social Network Show. Welcome to the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. We give you actionable information to make your social networking the best it can be for business to business, business to consumer, and for folks who just like to post. And now, broadcasting from the studios of the Hank Greenspoon School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, the host of the Social Network Show, Jim Nico, and Dr. Jane Kawaski.
Remember back a few months when advertisers pulled their ads from Facebook because they turned up on pages glorifying violent sexual abuse against women? The campaign that prompted that was hashtag FBRape, Facebook Rape Campaign. You'll be hearing from a chief instigator of that campaign today as we follow up on whether any lasting changes are underway. Welcome to another edition of the Social Network Show. I'm your host, experimental psychologist Jane Karwoski, along with Jim Nico, CEO of Social Network Intermedia. We are delighted to have as our guest today Soraya Shamali. And Ms. Shamali has had a professional career in strategic planning, marketing, and business development in the media, data, and technology fields. She is a writer, media critic, and activist whose work focuses on the role of gender in politics, religion, and popular culture. Her work appears regularly in Salon, The Huffington Post, RH Reality Check, Femme 2.0, Role Reboot, and Feminist Wire. She also writes for The Guardian, Ms. Magazine, and CNN. Ms. Shamali is a frequent radio, television, and online commentator and was one of the primary organizers of a recent successful social media campaign demanding that Facebook recognize misogynistic content as hate speech. She speaks regularly on the topic of gender violence and free speech. Ms. Shamali, it was the recipient of the 2013 Secular Woman Activist of the Year Award, as well as this year's Donna Allen Award for Feminist Advocacy. You can find her at S. Shamali, that is at S-C-H-E-M-A-L-Y on Twitter. And she's on Tumblr, where she shares her ideas and work. Welcome, Ms. Shamali, to the Social Network Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for coming down this road with us, because we know your work is important and we want to promote you.
Thank you.
You are so well known in so many circles that we're just eager to find out how Facebook is responding to the input from the organizers of that Facebook Rape campaign. But first, please give us a snapshot of the genesis of that project. What prompted it and why was it necessary?
Well, I would say that the very initial genesis was that once I started writing frequently and publicly as a feminist about gender and women's rights, I was really taken aback by the threats that I got online, which is a very common experience for women in the public sphere. If you happen to be a woman who's also a feminist, sometimes those threats can become very violent. And so I started looking into it and learned how common it was, and then learned a lot about the efforts of feminists before me to challenge companies like Facebook about their policies regarding misogynistic content, in particular rape and rape jokes. And so I wrote about that, and after I wrote about that, highlighting the pervasiveness of violence against women online and the ways in which it was disregarded, people started to send me things and ask for help. It was very clear that things were causing problems, and there was no way to address those problems. The legal system didn't address it. The police didn't know what to do with it. Online companies have immunity from any kind of prosecution for what is on their platform. So people came to me and they sent me material that was very disturbing. So, for example, actual videos of rapes in action, gang rapes, the abuse of women in brothels, the abuse of women in homes. And so I wrote a letter to senior managers at Facebook and suggested that they needed to take several steps. And this was after corresponding with them for a while. In the meantime, Laura Bates, who is a friend of mine in London, who had started Everyday Sexism, was having fairly similar experiences. And she sent me a video of a woman being beheaded that she was trying to have taken down from Facebook. And the combination of her work and my work led up to this campaign. So after Facebook responded to my private letter, but really didn't do anything, Jacqueline Friedman at Women Action in the Media approached me and said, let's turn this into a social media campaign. And we called Laura, who had been dealing with the problems and appealing to advertisers online, and we came up with the campaign.
Okay, so it was a concerted effort, and it seems like it definitely got a response, but how would you characterize that response in terms of, how much was, what happened immediately thereafter to begin with?
So when we launched the campaign, we actually published an open letter in the Huffington Post, and we started off with 10 co-signatories, organizations, human rights and women's rights organizations that co-signed our public letter. Within 24 hours, we had almost 100 signatories on the letter. And within 5 days, we had 60,000 tweets, 5,000 emails, and 15 advertisers that pulled out. On the second day of our campaign, the people that I had been in contact with at Facebook, they contacted us. They contacted us almost immediately. But I think they realized that it was
going public.
A substantive challenge.
Uh-huh.
And we started talking and negotiating. And at the end of the process of negotiation, which took about 5 days, Facebook made a public statement, which, as far as I know, has not happened before in terms of consumer agitation for change. And they made a public statement in which they admitted that they had failed to recognize misogyny as hate speech, and that they would take the steps that we had demanded, which were basically focused on raising awareness within the company for the reality of sexualized and domestic violence, training people, soliciting the input of experts in those areas, and categorizing violence against women as legitimately threatening, unsafe, bullying, harassment. A major part of that, which may seem superficial but actually isn't, was making sure that the designation controversial humor, which is what Facebook was putting on some of this content, was not used. And Facebook had already begun that process, but we, I think, pushed them over the edge and made sure that that would not happen. So before, what was actually happening was that this violence was literally being treated as a joke. And now that's not the case, which has other impacts which are good.
So even though these were films of actual crimes in progress, this was considered humor?
This was considered controversial. I don't really know what's controversial about rape. But anyway, it was considered controversial. And a lot of the content that we saw was, in theory, produced to be funny. And what they believed was that it might be offensive to some people and not to others. I don't use the word offensive. Offensive is what happens if somebody,
spits,
tells the wrong kind of joke at the dinner table. These were gross violations of human rights being used for people's entertainment. And so I think that that shift was a necessary one, shifting the way people think about that content and shifting the way it's organized on social media is a constant push.
So I remember at the a couple things about this. One was the withdrawing of advertisers because they didn't want they couldn't control where their ads were going to show up. And if they showed up on these pages, they were offended by this. They didn't want to be associated with this type of page. And it seemed like that was the biggest thing that Facebook was responding to. And that was the first action that they took was
That was the lever. I mean,
right.
Very definitely money was the lever. No amount of talking is going to change these cultures, right? And mm-hmm. So it just seemed like the most effective thing to do was deprive the company of revenue. I mean, if you're a major brand and you've invested hundreds of millions of dollars in building your brand, the last thing you want is to be associated with violent rape and domestic abuse. And what was happening was that content, and it wasn't just pages, we're talking about sharing of photos, we're talking about comments, we're talking about photographs. The pages are the easiest thing. All of that content coexists alongside major brands. And so it was very deliberate. Our approach was extremely deliberate from that perspective. And you know, initially Facebook came back publicly and said, we've removed all the offending pages, which frankly is simply untrue because people proliferate this content every single day and it far exceeds the creation of simply pages. It is an ongoing process, the creation and the review and the removal of this material. No one could ever remove all of these pages.
So if it's not on pages, where is it? I'm not sure I'm following that.
Well, it's just some people created pages, right?
Uh-huh.
So there might be a page. There was a page called I Kill Bitches, and it had basically people talking about that idea, and the photograph showed guns and dead women. And that's a page. So a user can report that page as threatening or harassing or bullying or whichever category they choose to report it under. And Facebook will then review the page, see if it meets their criterion for removal, and then decide whether to remove it or not. So that page was not removed. That page stayed up. And I can't remember whether it had a controversial tag or not, a controversial humor tag or not. But the page was clearly misogynistic, clearly threatening, clearly hateful, yet according to their normative interpretations, it stayed up. That's a page. If, however, you are a user and you post a photograph of a woman cowering in a corner being bludgeoned by a man, and the photograph is supposed to be a funny meme, photograph itself gets reported, not you and your page. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I'm also very curious about the conclusion to have some women, and I assume you were one of them, be on a board of consultants for their training of moderators and so forth. So let's get into that in the next segment.
Questions? Comments? Email us at questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
This moment of uncontrollable laughter was made possible by a 32-year-old man with little to no coordination attempting to execute a simple cartwheel. His name is Sergeant Warner, but young James, our laughing friend here, simply calls him Dad. The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Now, back to the Social Network Show.
Welcome back to the Social Network Show. Jim Nico and I, Jane Karwoski, are interviewing Soraya Shamali. And we're very privileged to have you with us and talk about the Facebook rape campaign, which occurred just about a year ago now. And we were getting into the question of the repercussions of that, what has been accomplished, what has yet to be accomplished. And one of the conclusions that Facebook came to was that they were going to invite many of the women, in fact, Soraya, maybe you can clue me into just who was invited to be a consultant or a body of consultants on their moderation of content.
So no one was invited to help them moderate content.
Oh, okay.
That wasn't actually the way that it was structured. What we asked was that they train moderators, mm-hmm. and that the staff, the broad staff, have greater exposure to and awareness of these issues in the hopes that as they developed their content moderation manuals and training and everything else, that this would
enhance
their ability to do it more fairly. So the first thing that we did was set up a portal whereby we could expedite reports. So anything that people were sending us things every day, I mean, it was just a tidal wave of material coming at us.
Right.
And so Facebook set up a specific reporting tool that Women Action and the media had access to, and all of us reported in bulk anything that we got through that tool, and they had a staff of people who would then expedite review with full awareness of the issues that we had raised. And that worked very well. I will say they were extremely fast and responsive with the hundreds and hundreds of items that we sent them in the wake of the campaign.
Sandy Garasino, former Crown prosecutor, we've been doing a series with Sandy for a long time. And So one of the things that Sandy said on a show quite a ways back, she said, if there's a company like Facebook or a social network, et cetera, that you can join for free, she said, I remember her saying that we are the product.
We are the product, absolutely.
Okay. So with that in mind, if we're the product then, what then do you think would be the motivation? I mean, now I'm going to talk about just a quick dark side, real quick. Dark side to this, even the criminals buy things, you know, as we all know, you know. So, I mean, where do you think that the motivation now is going? And I don't want to put you off track here.
The motivation for what precisely?
Okay, for any social network, you mentioned Facebook, to actually cooperate now and help eliminate, if possible, certain criminal behavior on their network. What would be the motivation now?
There are a couple of things. One is, I will say, having now worked closely with Facebook, that they are highly attuned to any behavior that is explicitly criminal, okay?
All right.
The disconnect, this is where I think there's a disconnect. I think there is a disconnect between their intent and their execution, okay? So, and they are aware of that. So anything, for example, that is explicitly related to child pornography, if brought to the right person's attention, is managed very differently from, say, a photograph of someone that makes them unhappy, and they report it, and they say, you know, they have a different process for that.
So the child pornography, because it is clearly illegal. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
And you mentioned if you get to the right person, how...
This is where I say the disconnect is. And this is why we still regularly are in communication on the issue of training. And I will say this right now. Sandy is the person to talk to in terms of child pornography.
Mm-hmm. Here's a quick question. Okay.
Yeah.
Real quick, and again, we're doing a series with her, and we hit the ground running with you. So I really appreciate your brilliant insights on this, and Jane's. So here's a simple approach, a simple question. Okay. Mm-hmm. When Rehtaeh Parsons took her life.
Yes.
Okay. And there were some issues when her dad, after she died, was so concerned, okay? And I know you've been on the inside of this, okay? So have you ever been able to get a straight answer, or do you think you ever will get a straight answer to this simple question posed by Glenn Canning? If it were your daughter, what would you do? You know, to Facebook, if it was their daughter, what would they do? I mean, I've never gotten a straight answer. Have you?
I can't answer that question either. I mean, one of the whole points of our campaign on a very broad level was to illuminate exactly how normatively sexist and biased the mainstream interpretation of these issues is, okay?
Right.
So, upskirt photos, which are photos used without consent, right?
Mm-hmm.
Taking upskirt photos is not illegal in most places in this country. And so it's not, quote unquote, illegal. It's not a matter of legality, but we'll just use that term. It's not illegal in social media, okay? So the mores that we see reflected in the regulation of content on social media platforms are in no way exceptional. Those are our mainstream mores. We see those mores reflected in the Motion Picture Association of America's regulations. We see them reflected in the FCC's regulations. Companies like Facebook and Instagram aren't creating these of whole cloth. They're just deriving them from the mainstream culture around us. And the mainstream culture around us regulates women's bodies and girls' bodies in a very specific way. And that way is not in the interest of girls and women.
Right. So it's a huge, it's a society-wide, well, global
Absolutely.
Issue. Because there's men and women all over the earth. So I appreciate through all your writings that you are really taking on some of these deep, deep issues, and the fact that it is so deep that many people don't even recognize it, because when something's so much a part of your environment, it's like, does the fish notice the water type of thing. So, but maybe by taking this on with the social media, that might be an effective way of bringing it to the attention, increasing awareness, increasing consciousness of this gender inequality. So that's one reason why I appreciate the work you've done with the social campaign and so forth, because it's a case study, you might say. You know, it's very hard to attack all of human society.
Right. You have to take it in small bits.
So is there any indication that as a company that has users, okay, we won't call ourselves customers because we're the product, but that they're selling to advertisers, data aggregators, et cetera, et cetera. But is there something that the company could march to a different drummer? You might say, you know, raise their standard, because they presume they have purportedly community standards. Why are those community standards, why do they have to be as low as the lowest common denominator in human society?
Well, I mean, we can focus on any of these companies at this point. They're all global, and they have seriously competing needs globally, right? Nationally, transnationally. I mean, Facebook has over a billion users. It's larger than most countries. And it's getting content from people all over the world with every single opinion on the spectrum of opinions, right? And so,
but isn't it just a case of how much of their revenue they're willing to devote to the cost? I would call it the cost of doing business. You know, companies, a grocery store can't get away with dangerous situations in the store and customers breaking legs, for instance.
Right, but are you suggesting that a lot of people think, for example, they should be investing more in having more content moderators? Is that what you're thinking of?
Is there a problem?
I don't really know how you produce a staff of content moderators that can monitor the production of a billion people. I mean, I think that that's a virtually impossible task. However,
They're technologists.
I will say this.
They write programs.
This is the problem, right? These are very complicated and nuanced issues. Some of it, to me, is not complicated and nuanced, okay? So, if a person is being raped on a videotape, that is not complicated and nuanced. It's a crime.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really nothing funny about it. There's nothing controversial about it, right? But rape is a joke in our society still. And so this is why we have this dynamic interplay between challenging the social mores in social media while simultaneously challenging them in the non-virtual world. And so, you know, Facebook has a huge investment of time and effort and resources with Yale, and they've come up with the Compassion Project, which is a way to engage users in direct communication with other users to confront what they perceive to be harassing behavior. And that's one way to enhance their moderation resources. I have no idea what their overall budget is like for moderation. I don't know how many people, for example, they have as moderators. I don't know that doubling or tripling the number would make any difference given the volume of content that they have. All we could really focus on was saying the way that you are governing the review of this content is sexist, mm-hmm. or is misogynistic or is homophobic, right?
So that the review that is done in a better fashion.
Is done in a more equitable fashion.
Right,
yes.
Right.
Okay, well, thank you so much. And it's obviously we can keep on going with this theme. We hope you come back to the Social Network Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, and we appreciate your work, and we do hope you come back and continue with us because it's not easy.
No.
Yeah, right.
No. And have a good rest of the day.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for being with us on this edition of the Social Network Show that is recorded at UNLV, Las Vegas, University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And please get in touch with us via the content link and on our webpage, thesocialnetworkshow.com. You can follow us on Twitter at @SocialNetShow. As well as hear the show on our website, Stitcher.com or iTunes. Thank you for joining us, and we look forward to speaking with you again.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media, coming to you from the studios of the Hank Greenspan School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Listen to archived shows and follow us on Twitter. The views expressed on the Social Network Show are those of the hosts and guests and may not be the views of Social Network Intermedia. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia, copyright 2012.